Welcome back, everybody, to the Enterprise Dish. Well, last time he carved out a little nook in an airport. This time, Rick is back in the office. How's it going, Rick?
Hey, Brad, I'm doing well, but don't let the lack of airport thought fool you. I just got back yesterday from spring break, so.
Oh.
I'll save that for my dish at the end, but yeah, all I was right, at an airport right. Yesterday, so.
Okay, so actually, what was yesterday? Well, 2 days ago. 48 hours ago, I was in an airport. I went up to New York City for a couple days, back home, and then getting ready to actually, well, we're going to be going down to Miami here for VeeamON.
Oh, yeah.
And then we got Build Conference. We got some other stuff going on. But before we do all that, Microsoft had a bunch of announcements, as they do every single month. And there's two we're going to hit on, but I want Rick to dive into one because I think he'll do a better job. The first one everyone should know of is Microsoft is extending their security graph to Mac OS. Not a big surprise here. Microsoft has quickly turned itself, it's been kind of manifesting over the years, but into a fully fledged security company. They will help you protect. They will help you triage. They will help you do everything. And now it's on Mac OS, and I think it's probably fair to say it'll eventually show up on Linux and Android and all that good stuff. But advanced threat protection now available, or coming soon, I should say, to Mac OS.
I think that's a natural play in this era of ransomware and different threats that can happen, even if you think about the other platform part of it, right? I mean, yeah, protection is good, but where I think Microsoft's going with it above all is that it's going to have a central management plane. Mm-hmm. So that if you look at Mac OS's and possibly even the mobile device strategy, if you have a management plane that would cover all devices, that's going to check very confidently a lot of enterprise checkboxes. So I think that this is a really good move. And a lot of people give me like funky reactions when I talk about Windows Defender, but I actually think it's pretty darn good. I use it myself. Which, you know, as most modern Windows users know, it comes with. And I actually think that when you look at the need for this, it's actually more important than ever. Everything from ransomware to even some of the old threats, especially for those who aren't patching, because Windows Defender updates are kind of a separate balance of updates compared to Windows updates of the OS. And then secondly, all the app updates. So you could have, say, a SQL Server issue, but you've not patched SQL Server. You might have patched Windows, but Defender was kind of going to watch potential vulnerabilities across all of that. So look for it to develop well. I think it'll be a good move. And, you know, the only thing that I kind of think about is what does that do to established players that are existing Microsoft partners? Yeah. I kind of have to play that out a little bit. It might be a little tougher, but you know, I look at the market of these types of things, myself even included at Veeam with backup, is we've always had to kind of contend with a built-in backup. And
sure.
We just added more value on top of that to let the market decide. And all of our biggest partners have always had their own backups of sorts. Mm-hmm. So it's been an interesting journey in that regard. But when I look at this play, I think it's a really good, broader, not even data center, just a broader data play, because this falls into BYOD, it's going to fall into mobile devices and all kinds of other things.
One of the things, though, that does somewhat play to Veeam, well, very much plays to Veeam's advantage. Microsoft offers a lot of services, but they typically stay pretty far away. They will say, we'll make your data available, right? We'll make sure that the hard drives work, that the internet connections are there, but the data is almost always the end user's responsibility. Microsoft doesn't, they want to say, that the structure's there. If you go screw it up, you're kind of on your own, right?
Well, same thing in the cloud.
Yeah.
If you look at shared responsibility models, you look at what happened to the MySpace data a couple weeks ago, I'm convinced it is a world of it's your data and it's your responsibility.
Sure.
So we have nothing but evidence here on that, and we definitely will see that continue. So I think the shared responsibility model in the cloud is one of the best examples, and I continually find myself reminding people that that's a big deal, meaning it's ultimately your data, and if it's your company's data, and if it's on devices, whether they're internal issued IT devices, BYOD, phones, and whatever, Protecting that and, you know, that kind of stuff is ultimately the organization's responsibility. So having tools in line to deliver yep. what's needed is really the way to go.
Yeah, I mean, the thing you got to think about is let's just pretend that there was an issue at Microsoft or Amazon or pick whoever, and let's just say it impacted a half of 1% or whatever, it doesn't matter. If it blows away all your corporate data and you have nothing left, it doesn't matter how much you sue Microsoft for, your company is not going to rebound. And so you got to make sure at the very end of the day, the thing that makes your business drive, you at least have a backup copy somewhere that you have full control over.
Yeah, I'm actually finding myself drawing a lot of parallels to the insurance industry of where you don't really ever want to go have insurance or spend the money for it. Mm-hmm. But if you need it, it's really, really helpful.
Yep.
And I think that everything from backup to even antivirus type, mm-hmm. you know, malware protection and content management, content filtering, they kind of align a lot to that because bad things can happen to good data and good systems. And if the right thing to do is have protections should those occur. And that is the parallel that I keep seeing to insurance. And I keep kind of explaining it to people that way. In fact, that's how I explain what I do to my mom. And then she gets it. So that seems to work.
Yep. So, all right, Rick, the big kind of announcement the past 30 days since we've talked is Microsoft's Windows Virtual Desktop is now in public preview, and Microsoft pitches this as the best virtual desktop experience. Now, my question to you is, why do people need this? What is the point of this product? Who's it targeted for? What's it good for?
I'm struggling to answer any of those questions positively, Brad, I'll be honest with you. I want to draw parallels to what I've seen across the technology because I honestly think I love Microsoft, by the way, mm-hmm. but I honestly think that Azure has no real impact on the end result. It's the whole concept of VDI. Mm-hmm. And in the VMware side, we have been waiting for years for the year of VDI, years and years and years and years. I find VDI, there's good use cases that go around remote access occasionally, but not your day-to-day every use, everyday system that you use. I have a VDI environment that I use. It's not an Azure Windows Virtual Desktop, mm-hmm. but I use it when I go to a certain environment, so it's a remote access, and it works great. And I actually think whether it's VMware Horizon View or a virtual desktop in Azure or a Citrix solution, I really don't think it matters. It's the use case that matters. The different technologies will differentiate the experience for them. Like one of them might have a better transport protocol. One of them, Azure might actually bring better bandwidth because it's going to be mm-hmm. super connected to the internet, right? They're each going to have their own kind of performance characteristics. But I have yet to see VDI tip over to be mainstream. And when I think about a Windows Virtual Desktop, I've read through the page. Okay, I like what I see, but I just don't see myself using it. And I have a real hard time saying that everyone would use it. Now, what might change that, Brad, is a device, is the endpoint. And I'm just like, I held my caffeinated and sugary beverage up earlier before the call here, but I trust you. It's all, you know, mm-hmm. suitable for a family show here, what I've been drinking. But if I'm really kind of going crazy with my ideas, what I think we need is a device. Take a Chromebook to the next level, sure. that it just launches this type of seamlessly centrally managed. That's kind of where I think it needs to go mm-hmm. because otherwise I just frankly just love the Windows experience on my desktop.
Yep.
And if you think about VDI, it's all great till you get on a plane. It's all great mm-hmm. to until you're somewhere with limited connectivity. I was out in rural New Mexico this week and rural parts of Texas, and you know, I had no coverage at all.
Sure.
So, you know, it's one of those things that, and I was even in a whole town that had no cell coverage, right? So it's like good luck finding Wi-Fi because mm-hmm. a lot of times it's your own burden to bring your own. So I'm really having trouble getting excited about this in my own personal experience, and that really comes from what I see on the market on VDI, and maybe I'm a heckler here, but there is one use case, by the way, that they do position as a way that can make a lot of sense for people, and that's around extended security updates. So a lot of people know that a couple of deprecated Windows OS's, 2008 R2's coming up, as is Windows 7 for the extended support stopping. Now, you could basically take a Windows 7 system to Azure and get extra update time. That is one use case for this, but that doesn't really solve the problem.
Sure.
Okay. A lot of time, but there are things that you might need to stick around with. I get that. In fact, I heard of this one use case that I think is actually a lot more common. It's not so much a Windows 7, but you'll see this in Windows Server a lot. You have this whatever XYZ application, and then you've moved to a software as a service offering, whatever it is. You might need to hold on to XYZ application for 7 years, but it's not your production system anymore. Actually, putting that in Azure for those 7 years is actually a really good idea. We've been helping a lot of customers do that with our cloud mobility technique, because as they move it off to Azure, it doesn't need tier one storage on-prem anymore. They can scale it down a little bit, and it might be on a deprecated OS and you don't want to touch it. The cloud's the right way to go. But I don't know, Brad. I might get kicked off the show for saying that, but I'm just not really sure about that virtual desktop taking off.
That's why I bring it up. It's because it's one of those things, and I mean, I say I like it. Like, I think it's an interesting idea what they're trying to do, but I haven't figured out what the killer use case is. I mean, obviously, it makes thin clients possible. It allows you to take a Chromebook and maybe turn it into a Windows machine on the go. But the point being that it's not an end-all solution. Like, a company is not going to look at this and be like, yep, we're going to all just migrate to this, because to your point, if you're going on a plane, it doesn't work. There's a lot of solutions or scenarios where it's not ideal. And I'm sure people are going to write in and tell us this, you know, we have an endpoint in a factory that's running old hardware, and that's a great solution. But those are minor kind of installs of, you know, hand-picked, rather than being like, okay, here's 500 machines at a time, because Microsoft is a company about scale. And other than the small scenarios, the only thing I can think of here is that they're waiting for 5G to become ubiquitous, and they're trying to have a solution out there, and then they're going to release some Surface Thin client that ties into this. But to your point,
and that might be what we need, right? Yeah. In the device, it has to be that the device and the connectivity. But I don't think that the virtual desktop hosted in Azure by itself is enough of a solution.
I agree. I fully agree with that. And that's why I wanted to pick your brain on this, because obviously we can read through the Microsoft marketing stuff and it all sounds like this is like the future. But when you kind of drill through how this works and what it's good for, I mean, why would I run it on a high-end machine like this? Like, it doesn't make sense, because I'm going to get better connectivity. I'm going to get a better experience locally, especially with this kind of hardware. So then you go back to, okay, well, it's only good for maybe what, old hardware? But then is that old hardware going to have fast enough connectivity? Is it going to be what you want to do? I don't know. It's an interesting product, but in some respects, I feel like it's a product looking for a solution rather than a solution looking for an answer type thing.
And I look at where, because and I love, by the way, that at least on the page at Microsoft, they call it VDI.
Yep.
Because it's really important. I don't want to have to say it's a new category, right? Mm-hmm. So that I can align my knowledge of the VDI space. And there are a lot of organizations that use it, don't get me wrong, that use VDI. Remote access is probably one of the best use cases for any type of GRC, governance, regulatory, or compliance type of situation, right? I know some of my friends, their only remote access for the healthcare space is through a remote session through VDI.
Okay.
Another family of mine is in the legal space, same deal. And so there's use cases, but it's only the remote access. And then if you think about day to day, I've seen some environments, call centers, where it's a little bit more appropriate. But the one thing that I've seen not work so good with it is the device, because then you end up having these expensive devices, and there's a whole bunch of those thin client type devices, and that's where I kind of see, for a pure VDI use case, it making the most sense. But yeah, it is a technology not quite aligned to a solution.
Yeah, we'll see how this plays out, and obviously Microsoft's going to build this out and let it mature and just let it hang about. I know absolutely nothing about the overhead it incurs on Microsoft, but it seems like they're putting this solution in place in case that market kind of materializes, then they're ready to rock and roll.
Well, it's basically zero overhead because this sits as a VM in Azure, right? So Microsoft is very smart, and they're not making a technology so far distributed and different than anything else. And I actually personally think we're going to see more of these types of services in Azure show up that are just built on other services, right? So the add to do something like this, this is nothing like adding a whole new full-blown product for virtual desktops, right? So I actually think Microsoft is smart to do these types of things because there's basically no extra investment.
We will see. We will see. And then, Rick, we had a question come in directly from a reader this week. They wanted to, I think it's last week technically. They wanted to know, do you think that we need antivirus on Android? Because there's been a lot of talk about bad apps getting into the Google Play Store, and there are solutions out there that are antivirus for Android. Curious on your thoughts.
Well, I do think we would need it on all platforms. I think there's something on my phone. I have an Android phone, and I think there is something on it because, trust me, it said stuff to me before. So do we need it on mobile devices? I think so. Specifically to solve the problem about bad apps getting into a place, a store. The model of the two different, multiple different stores, the Apple and the Google store, it would be a little bit easier to get rogue apps into the Google store, I would suspect. I'm not an app developer. Mm-hmm. But I kind of think that antivirus is always going to be too late because you're just going to build an app ahead of the definitions and then it's ineffective. So, you know, I think, yes, we need it, but I don't know if that's the problem it's going to solve.
There you go. There you go. All right, Rick, I've been curious about this. So you were in an airport yesterday. You're back from vacation.
Yeah.
Where'd you go? What'd you do?
So I think I'm going to effectively redish. I think I've dished on this before, but I'm going to say take good vacations, everybody. So we went on spring break vacation, and my wife picks out the best stuff. I tell you, she does great. Well, actually, she lets a kid pick it out. We got the kids a book of all the national parks here in the U.S., and we let the kids pick a park, and we build a trip around it. And the only exception is because it's only a week, and we don't actually go the whole week. We only go for 5 nights or so. It has to just be in the continental U.S., so no Alaska, Hawaii, Puerto Rico yet, but I think we will do that. But we let the kids pick a national park, and we go out and have fun. So this year we went to the Guadalupe Mountains in Texas, the Carlsbad Caverns in New Mexico, the White Sands National Monument in the interesting town of Roswell, New Mexico, and a couple other things in between. But it was a great trip, man. It was 88 degrees and sunny every day, too. Yeah.
Ooh, that's the killer right there. Because we got a little taste of spring actually here yesterday. It was in the mid to upper 60s.
Yeah.
But I'm waiting for that heat to come back.
Yeah, so take good vacations, you know, even if it's a work trip, you know. But I was really, really enjoyed that. El Paso is where we flew into, interesting part of the country. I had tacos every day for lunch, and I loved it, and it's great.
Tacos are not a bad way to live your life.
No, taco is a win.
Especially in that part of the country. They make some good tacos down there.
Exactly.
Awesome stuff, Rick. Well, before we shut it down, you got anything else for us? Anything else going on? I know we've got VeeamON coming up here in May, and actually Flo Rida is going to be performing, you guys announced.
Yeah,
that's going to be...
We just announced the main act is Flo Rida. We're excited. Yeah. We're actually, we're almost going to have him at the Chicago event, but long story, it didn't work out. Mm-hmm. But we did secure him here for Miami, so it's going to be a concert party on the beach. This is going to be awesome.
On the beach.
On the beach. Yeah. And
wow.
You know, I tell you what, if anybody wants, hit me up on Twitter at Rick Vanover. I can give you a $200 discount to VeeamON if anybody wants it.
We will definitely name drop Rick in the comments and descriptions for all that stuff so you can find Rick to actually come hang out with us on the beach.
Yep.
That is going to be fun. That is such perfect timing too, cuz I'm going to come back from Seattle. I'm going to have a couple days off, then I'm going to get on a plane to go down to Miami. And VeeamON's always a hell of a time. We do a bunch of interviews. We're all over the place. And then to go hang out on the beach, that is going
to
be...
Yeah, I'm looking forward to it. It's we as a company put a lot of work into it. Mm-hmm. But yeah, we're happy to see everybody there until the code runs out. Boom! So we only get 50 uses of that code. So if you want it, you better get on it.
Gotcha. Well, we will make sure to get this out here quickly. And that way everybody can, well, hopefully enough people can take advantage of it. But Rick, we very much appreciate your time for stopping by, filling us in on everything going on your side. And everybody else, make sure to hit that subscribe button. We'll be back in a couple weeks, and have yourselves a wonderful, I don't know, day, week, or whatever you want to have. Later.